accession number 19067, Reel 2.
Fred McLeod, Reel 2.
Right. Well, he could look straight up the road, and at top of the road, we had a machine gun post, and it was the REs had been up, and it was a concrete bunker. And directly across the road, there was another concrete bunker, we had these machine guns with the belt type Vickers machine guns, heavy machine guns, and there was what they call enfilade fire, a crossfire, and it covered about a good mile, and directly in front of them was the what I've just said about the our barbed wire and landmines, beach mines, etc. Just switch it up a little bit, will you? Yeah, in history, I think Sir Walter Raleigh had, he was playing bowls on
Plymouth Hoe.
On Plymouth Hoe, yes. Well, in our farmyard at Ross Farm, we had what they called it was a anti-radio thing, a golden ray rocket. Now, Sir Walter Raleigh, they were supposed to have beacons on the headlights, on the headlamps. Well, we, in our farmyard, we had this golden ray rocket, and it was like the stood... And it was if the invasion started, if it started, the quickest way and the most concrete way was to fire the rockets, and the rockets was every 2 miles, I think it was, all around the coastline of England and the British Isles. If the invasion started, that was the first thing. The rocket was fired. We went up the road, we manned our two machine gun posts, and we also had a 6-pounder anti-tank gun on the beach, and all we had was 128 rounds. So, what would have happened after we'd fired them 128 rounds, I just don't know. But luckily, we wasn't invaded, and we eventually was withdrawn inland, and
to New Biggin.
We went to New Biggin, yes. Yeah, New Biggin by the sea, yes, and was twice at New Biggin, and. We went to Scotswood in Northumberland. Had an invitation to go down the mine there. I declined it. And there was a miners club at I think it'll come to what they call it, but they call the Miners Club the Fellham Donor, and it was like that, Fell M Donor, as a Geordie Wood speak, Fellham Donor, and it was a Miners Club, and at that time, I used to play a piano accordion. I had it with me. I took it in the army, and I think I flogged it eventually. I don't know. But there was this a chap called from Dewsbury, a chap called Ronnie Gibson, and it was a marvellous pianist. And we also had these. I think it cut the charge them sixpence. These sixpenny ops, and they also. These dances, you know, and you've got a cup of tea and a biscuit with them, and he played the piano and I played the piano accordion, and I brought another one home with me, didn't I? But not this other one. It was called a Mariotti piano accordion, and it was a good accordion as well.
What were relations like with the local people in Northumberland?
Very good. Very good. There's one thing that I'll never forget, and that was New Year's Eve, what they call first foot in. And that was the first one going into the door, midnight was charming or luring itself in, you know. And they used to have a bucket of coal outside and a few sticks and this, that and the other. And they also asked you to take the bucket in, put a few sticks on the fire and not to retrace your steps, but to go straight through the house, in at one and out at the other, you know. You took the new year or the old year through, will you? And...
Was that in Northumberland or in Cumberland?
No, that was in Northumberland. Because in Cumberland, we never got to the New Year. We moved out just about Christmas time when we moved onto the coastal defences, like.
So you were telling me about boarding the Orcades.
Oh, the Orcades, yes, yeah. Yeah, the Orcades. She was a 28,000-ton P&O liner, and there was A deck, B deck, C deck, D deck, E deck, F deck, G deck, and we was on G7. So we was seven or eight decks, mess decks down. The most hilarious thing I thought was, you'll see it maybe in that book, was rigging a hammock up and getting into an hammock without falling out the other side. I mean, there's a knack in it. And this okay day, she was so big that there were two swimming pools on her, and there was one amidships, and the other one was a children's pool on the poop of the ship. And I've never experienced anything like it in all my life. As regards the ship, there was a grand staircase from the I forget what the deck was called, but if there was any meetings or anything there, it was in this main like a big main hall in the ship. It stretched from east, you know, port side to starboard side. It was a marvellous ship. It was really, you know, I've never experienced anything like it. You wouldn't think it was a ship. How she was run: meal times, duty times, recreation times. It was wonderful. It was a wonderful experience. Frightening, yes, but.
What was so frightening about it?
And the frightening part was, We went down, and you could literally hear the sea buffeting, and she was cutting. I think she was capable of doing about 24 knots. Well, I mean, that's some speed for a bit. It's approaching about 30 mile an hour. Nautical land wise, but nautical, she could do about 20 odd knots. And one of the frightening things was that we also have boat stations in case there was an attack on the ship, or whether she had been torpedoed or anything like that. And we did anti-aircraft duties. That was with these I can't remember what sort of machine guns that there was, but there was an every ACAC guns. There was, we used to do two on, four off. It's 24 hours, like, so you got three spells on and three spells off, and that was some of the frightening things. When guns used to open up. And that one of the things that was frightening was we came up on deck, and at each side there was a fair stretch of open sea. And the chap I was with, he said to me, he said, "I don't like this, Mac." He said, "There's enough room," he said, "there for a U-boat to come up. Sub to come up at either side." So I said, I don't like it either. Well, anyhow, the next morning, we'd stood down, and the next morning, it come tearing up to me, and he said, "Just come and have a look at this." And it's a thing that I'll never forget in all my life. Them two empty bays of water. There was an HMS Rodney on one side, and the Nelson on the other side. That was their best, and that was about about 7 or 8 days after the convoy was forming up, and it was moving out to nobody knew. They was taking bets on where we was going, and we eventually we didn't dock. We just laid off Sierra Leone, you know, West Africa, and we stopped there to check fresh water on and extra supplies and this, that, and the other. We stopped there about 72 hours, I think it was, and then we came out there. The convoy, it moved out, and it reformed again, and it set off, and I'll always remember a song was "On the Road to Mandalay," when you see the flying fish play, and you could in the when she was absolutely motoring the Orcades, through the spray you could see these flying fish trying to, you know, whether it was going out the way or not, I don't know, but it was clearing the bows, you know, and you could see them as though there was flying through the rays of the sun. And we eventually docked at, what do they call it now?
In the Middle East or India?
No. Africa, East Africa.
Durban.
That's the one, Durban. And Durban docks, they're inland docks. The ships, it's tremendous. They go through, like, coming through East Hull to go to the Cenotaph, you know, and then they gradually open out into the docks. And there was a site there I'll never forget it in all my life. And as we passed it, it was the HMS Newcastle, and she'd been torpedoed. And how she kept afloat, I just don't know. And we was looking straight across the lake that, and after about a week, when we'd got off, we was doing guards on the dock, and we went to have a look, and I can remember standing on the quayside, and my mouth must have been open because the chap just come and he put his finger in my mouth. I was absolutely flabbergasted at the size of her. It was like looking up some 50 or 60 feet up from the deck, from the quayside, looking up to the poop of the ship. Was it tremendous? Something I'll never forget. And this chap, I'll always remember what he said. He said, "Aye," he says, "you'd put a double decker bus in that hole, wouldn't you, Mac?" Just like that, and that was like. And we was at Clarewood Camp in Durban, and it was a transit camp, Army Air Force, and on naval ratings. We were six weeks there, and
do you know about roughly what the date was? Is it still 1941?
No, it was after that. It was sometime about June 1942, about round about this time of year, but 1942, and. This OKDs that we got up, and we were waiting for this ship. We were waiting for this ship because it was coming going unescorted from Durban to Bombay, and they called it where the OKD is just went through and gentle like that 28,000 ton. This ship, it just rolled from side to side like that. It'll come to me what they call it. But where there was about somewhere in the region of I should say about 8,000 or 9,000 troops on the OKDs. On this one, there was just our battalion, and I think it was a wing of a nurse's field hospital. They was on the air deck, and we was on the sea deck, I think it was. And it was this one. It was, I think it was about maybe 7,000 or 8,000 ton, but she was unescorted, and she could get on. She could motor, could this one, and I think it should go faster than any U-boat. And
had you had any experiences when you were in Claremont Transit Camp?
No, not really. Well, we was on IS duties in there, and was called out one particular night to go into Durban, and we went. Motorised platoon trucks and whatnot, and it appears that the trouble was that these Australians, I think there was one of their chaps had got stabbed, and he died, and it appears that these Australians had made their mind up that they was going down to the it was a shanty town, and Brussels and whatnot, you know, and there was on the there was going down that they was going to sort, which they did do. There was about 12 or 13 of them, you know, they went in with these really matchets and whatnot, cookeries and etc. And they made a right job of these. I forget what they call these, like half caste Africans. like coalies, and there was nearly all coalies, dockers and whatnot, in Devon. Because when it's funny, when ships was coming in to dock, there was these railway wagons. They were all made of metal. They were all made of metal, iron, you know, because the heat was so intense. And the stevedores, they was all dockers, and the lads, there was sorting washes out and bits of iron and a few pennies and whatnot. And they're throwing them over the side into these railway wagons. Of course, you know, it was a sort of entertainment, you know. As they was bending down, they was kicking each other and all that.
But you had to go in and stop the Australians attacking the people in the shanty town?
Well, it was more or less that. Soon as they saw us coming in any numbers, you know, maybe a section, a platoon, a riot squad or out like that, then they just seemed so, you know, fade away and dispersed. Because it's quite true, is whenever a convoy went into South Africa, I forget what they call this lady, but she used to stand right on the end of the pier, and she, you know, like she used to sing like Vera Lynn, and she used to sing all convoys in, "We'll meet again," and all that, all convoys in, and all convoys out, and a nickname, they called her the Lady in White. And she was all in white, like a white evening dress. And she used to sing through this loudspeaker. And it's quite true. Is every convoy that came in, she never missed a convoy. And every convoy that went out. And that's what happened in all the pubs in Durban. And it's quite true, is this. Whenever a convoy came in, Durban went dry. All the pubs were shut, and that was the cause of it. This Australian getting knifed, murdered, and them going in to retaliate. It's quite true. And the doors, the public house doors in Africa, in Durban, is like the old cowboy batwing doors, so they never shut. The flap, and there's a clearance below about 2 foot, and you can see over the top. Any chap about 5 foot 4 out like that, you can see what's happening before you ever get into the pub. And the reason for that is there's no doors on the pubs, only them bat wings, and it's the circulation of the cold air, you know, so that into the pub, as well as them punkers, you know, them electric fans.
So you were travelling across the Indian Ocean, you were saying, in this new boat.
Yeah. Well, when you say about being frightened, I was frightened because they always call you, when anything was going to happen, boat stations. So if it was torpedo or anything like that. And it's quite true, is this, that we was going in the convoy on the OK days. And I can't remember how many ships there was, but I don't know for a fact that there was 6 destroyers, and there was all this encircling the convoy. There was the Nelson and the Rodney, and there was an aircraft carrier, the Indomitable, and there was one cruiser. It was the biggest convoy that left the English shores, and I'm sure it was in up June 1942. And we got called to both stations, and that when I said I was frightened, they was all frightened. And all of a sudden, coming straight diagonal in the dark, it was about midnight, pitch black, and there was this light coming, and it's off Alpha Leather. And of course, everybody didn't know what the hell it was. But we got to know next morning at the studders down and at breakfast time next morning. They said, "Well, lads," "you was all a bit scared last night." He said, "But there was no need for it. If you want to know what it was a Queen Mary, and it's the honest truth, is it? And she had about 6,000 or 7,000 Americans coming to England. And she come right through the middle of the bloody convoy, as true as I'm looking at you." And I was frightened, because a chap alongside of me, all of a sudden, he growled over my shoulder, he said, "What the hell is that?" And it was a Queen Mary, and she's unescorted, because she was that fast. And she come right through the middle of the convoy. They'd know, I suppose, the naval, what they call them, personnel, the ships, they'd know what she was. And she did. She come right through the middle of the convoy, and they told us at breakfast time next morning.
What were conditions like living in the ships on this voyage?
This ship, the Orcades, what a ship! 28,000 ton. Air deck. Rope matches round it. She was that big. Rope matches round it. Truthfully, they used to take our army boats off us, and you was only allowed to wear plimsolls or sand shells. Till once a week, they brought your boats up, all boats were numbered and named, and we used to go about 50 times round air deck, and going round. Round and round and round and round and round. It's quite true. And that was just to stop your feet from going too soft. And they took your boats off you, numbered them, you got your plimsolls. And the reason for that was the steel toe caps and nail plates, anybody walking about, they were frightened that the sound carrying for submarines, U-boats or anything like that. Yeah, you really can't visualise it, to think that soldiers doing rope marches on a troop ship, but that's absolutely true. Which were 28,000 ton. She had two swimming pools on her, and she had the runner like they absolutely run her like a city. She had the security, the seamen, there was security, military MPs aboard, and she was a well maintained, organised. She's a wonderful vessel. That was the first time I'd ever been to sea, and I don't think I've been to sea since. And it was quite an experience, but it had its weirdo times, and it had its happy times. Was well,